the winter of 2002 to 2003, I decided that I was going to move to Norway forever. So I said goodbye to everyone and I went and rented a cabin in the Arctic, way far north.
This is the musician Phil Elverum, who performs under the name Mount Erie.
But during that time, I received mail. I hollowed out a stump and wrote my name on it and got the passing mail truck to deliver me. It's super romantic, but it's true. And so I got this package from this person who liked my music. She sent me all of her comics that she had made and wrote me this really nice letter.
The letter writer turned out to be a woman from Quebec named Geneviève Castré. Like Phil, she was in her early 20s, but she was already a critically acclaimed cartoonist and a fellow musician.
And I had heard about her. People were like, Phil, you got to meet this person, this French-Canadian. She's amazing. I think you're destined to know her. So we started our correspondence then. We met in person the next summer, and it was kind of instant.
They were married within a year. And for the next dozen years, they built a life together in a small town on a remote island in Washington State where Phil had grown up. In 2015, they had a daughter. And a few months after that, Geneviève was diagnosed with advanced pancreatic cancer.
She was sick for 13 months, or, you know, diagnosed and going through treatment, cancer treatment, orthodox chemo and every alternative thing.
She died in the summer of 2016. She was 35. It was naturally a loss that Elverum couldn't stop thinking about or writing songs about.
Thank God. Boat and came to the place where the three of us were going to build our house if you had lived.
Last year, he released an album of songs about Geneviève and her death and his responses to it called A Crow Looked at Me. It is as sad as you'd imagine, but it is also sublime. The music magazine Pitchfork called it one of the best albums of 2017, saying that it makes us feel less alone and it reminds us to go easy on ourselves. And Phil Elverum has now followed that up with a kind of sequel called Now Only. So these two albums, this brand new one and the one you put out a year ago, are extremely beautiful.
Thank you.
I want listeners to get a sense of what we're talking about. So if you could play a song, that'd be great.
Oh, okay.
And this one first is going to be what?
Earth.
Earth.
I don't want to live with this feeling any longer than I have to, but also I don't want you to be gone. So I talk about you all the time, including the last day that you were alive. And I hang your pictures up around the house for me to surprise myself with and cry. Everybody that used to know us seems concerned, but if they knew that when you enter my mind, I'm full of the love that illuminated our house for all those years and made this dancing child who tears through the days with a brilliance you would have deepened and sang along with. But you're sleeping out in the yard now. What am I saying? No one is sleeping. You don't even have a dead body anymore. It was taken away. I went and wrote a check and got a cardboard box full of your ashes and a little plastic bag with your necklace. And I drove back home, truly alone. I guess I didn't bury it deeply enough when I poured out your ashes beneath the three witch hazels that you planted in the yard a few years ago in a triangle for us. where me and the kid were rolling in the grass the other day, and I saw actual chunks of your bones, bleached and weathered, unerasable. You're still out there in the spring upheaving, coming out of the ground into air. It's that exact fragment, your finger that once caressed me not that long ago. I still can feel it, and it's that other shard, a piece of your skull that once contained the wild brain that used to overflow with loving. Undiscovered and gone, and now just shrapnel remains. Earth, I poured your ashes out was on a chair on top of a mountain, pointed at the sunset. I went back there last week after a year has passed and noticed that the chunks of your bones that haven't been blown away are indistinguishable from the other pieces of animal bones brought there by coyotes, vultures, and gods. Against my will, I felt a little bit of solace creeping in. Well, I laid there on the moss, compost and memory. There's nothing else. I can hear wolves in the throne room singing. I will lay down my bones among the rocks and roots. Sit and picture myself curled up beneath 10 feet of water at the bottom of the lake. I imagine trout bumping against me in the low diminished light, holding my breath, trying to be a boulder, eroding to join you in remingling with the background of churned muck coalescing in the dark. To get ground back down to matter only, eternal and dumb, becoming not a thing, abdicating.
That's Phil Elverum singing Earth from his new album, Now Only. I am not an easy crier, but that's the second time I've heard that song. And before, I hadn't met you, and it was just on a computer. But it choked me up then, and it was all I could do to keep it contained this time. It's a beautiful, beautiful...
Thank you.
Unlike any song I've ever heard song.
Thanks. Yeah, it's about cremation.
Yes.
Not many songs about that, I guess.
The first album, after your wife's death, A Crow Looked at Me, you started by saying death is real and it's not to memorialize as art or transform into something artful, I guess. Mm-hmm. Here you are, your second album about it.
Doing just that.
How do you reconcile that?
Well, that was sort of the inherent contradiction, even with that first song where I said that in a song.
Death is real. Someone's there and then they're not. And it's not for singing about. It's not for making into art. When real death enters the house, all poetry is dumb.
I think I'm comfortable in contradiction, or I find it interesting to say something that cancels itself out.
Right.
And to live within that disparity.
Which is inherent in lots of art.
Yeah.
You contain multitudes and contradictions.
Exactly. Yes. Is that Walt Whitman?
It is.
Yeah.
In these songs, you address Genevieve directly.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the time. Do you think of that as a literary device, or are you continuing a conversation with her?
You know, it just happened that way. I didn't think about it in advance. I'd noticed that I was still speaking to her. I wrote the songs in the room where she died. Not for morbid reasons, but just because that was that's a spare room in our house. That's where we set up the hospital bed when hospice came and stuff. So I guess I felt like she was the one who understood what I was navigating through. She was there too, even though she didn't exist anymore.
Right.
Also, that's a contradiction that I found interesting, and that's kind of where I live now. It's like, I don't believe in anything.
I mean, ghosts and spirits and souls.
Yeah, afterlife. But then yet I'm singing all these songs to her, or like some concept of her, and who am I singing to?
Yeah. Be careful. If you say that too much, proselytizers are going to come and proselytize you.
Oh, don't worry. It happens.
I'll bet.
They found me.
I'll bet they have. And these songs on this new album and the one last year are a new mode for you.
That's
true.
There
was a lot more poetic language and metaphor before, and there's lots more concrete, straightforward description of death, for instance.
Yeah. I feel like everything I made before, I can't relate to it at all. It's just I'm never going to play those songs again. It was
really
a different person. Yeah, I feel like, a huge guillotine came down and severed that part of my life permanently. Poetry seemed useless in the context of actual annihilation. So I felt like, well, if I'm going to write anything or say anything, all I am allowed to talk about is what I know for sure to be true, which is breakfast and, you know, reality. That's all I know. That's all I know anymore. Something that's not poetry, something that is just my real life.
Are you one of those who will not say pass on or passed away and you prefer
die? Yeah, I say die. Or sometimes killed. I mean,
yeah,
honestly,
I'm with you.
What's the point of trying to soften the blow? No, it doesn't benefit anyone.
But people get cancer and die. People get hit by trucks and die. People just living their lives get erased for no reason with the rest of us watching from the side.
I understand you have a new songwriting ritual about literally how you write songs.
Can you talk
about that?
For these, I wrote them all on paper with a pencil on these special pieces of paper.
Special in what way?
They were long scroll-type pieces of paper that Genevieve had letterpressed on many years ago as a Christmas present for people in my family. She made some, like, nice stationery. But they had these leftover scraps from that time that were these long scrolls, and they just fit the shape of these songs that I was trying to write. Lots of words, vertical. And I've got them in my guitar case right there.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I see one?
Sure. Yeah.
Wow, yes. They're like 2 feet long or more, and like some artifact from the 1930s or something.
Yeah, there's lots of words in these songs.
I'll say, wow.
This one's really long.
That one is 4 sheets. That one's 4 feet long.
Some of them, I had to tape them together. And
is this new for you? You didn't used to do this?
No, and I keep doing it maybe out of a little bit of superstition, because these are special pieces of paper, and actually, I have just a few pieces left,
right.
So maybe that's how many songs I have left.
Well, that's interesting. That will be a self-ending thing for this phase, maybe?
Yeah, or maybe I can letterpress some more.
And it is so interesting to me. You are a non-believer. You're creating all these various rituals, as people have for eons, around a death.
Mm-hmm. Things take on a crow looked at me is the title of the thing. So that means there's significance in the world. This bird that is just a bird, but it looked at me. And what does that mean? And so, yeah, this uncomfortable acknowledgement of that feeling of attaching significance to insignificant things.
Genevieve wrote and drew a final children's book, which is lovely, and being published later this year.
Yeah, she got this idea that she wanted to make a book for our daughter. And
it's called A Bubble.
A Bubble, and it's about a mom who lives in a bubble where she can't break through the bubble to interact with her child. And it's just all portraits of them, of our daughter and Genevieve. And she was working on it in her literal last days. She was on oxygen at her desk. She was devoting everything to it because she was going for the big win of surviving. So her idea was like, if I throw everything into surviving, then I'll get to be alive. And even as she knew that it wasn't happening at the very end, I think she was still focused on finishing this book.
She didn't quite finish it, right?
No, and so she didn't draw the bubbles around the characters, for example. So a friend of ours, Anders Nilsson, who's also a graphic novelist, went through and brought it to the point of publishability.
Would you be comfortable reading a little bit of it to the listeners?
Oh, sure. Mama lives in a bubble. It has been a while now. I no longer remember the time when she didn't live in the bubble. I was too little. Hello, Coquette. Hi, Mama. She invites me to eat in her bubble every morning. She doesn't mind if I make crumbs with my toast. When I'm sad, Mama comforts me in the bubble. I like it. It'll be okay, mon chouette. These French nicknames.
Jean-Viable was French-Canadian.
That's right, yeah. Sometimes I take a nap in the bubble. This is a special time for Mama and me. Mama often works in her bubble. She's on her phone. When I come back from an adventure in the woods with Papa, I come and tell her everything. Mon petit champignon. Mama can't join us because of the bubble. She would really like to come play with us. Champignon. Yeah, that was, she had a name. Champignon, mushroom, and also champion, champion. So I draw with her. It brings her great joy. And one day, the bubble bursts so suddenly, just like magic. Mama ends up on the ground, all disoriented. She kisses me 1,000 times without even catching her breath. She invites me for an ice cream cone. I say yes. So yeah, it's aspirational. She was trying to draw her survival.
But depicting
the bubble just bursting by magic, right, all of a sudden.
Right. Do you think, will you allow your daughter to read this?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, all of this stuff. My stance is just to always, when I'm talking about death and stuff to our daughter, to also say, we loved her. She loved us. We love thinking about her. It's all just love. And that's still present. And to not make it scary. It can be sad and full of love at the same time.
Before you go, will you play one more song?
Yeah.
And this is which?
Crow Part 2. A crow that's being dreamed by a child who's being carried through the forest, sleeping, wondering in her twilight half-awareness where her mother went. I know that you died, but in this child's crow dream you survive. Beneath layers of magical, symbolic wild animals inhabiting the edges of our fogged over consciousnesses, grasping for something to hold, something old, like a name cut into a stone, or a bird that will make eye contact.
That's Phil Elverum singing Crow Part 2 from the new Mount Erie album, Now Only. Jean-Viève Castre's illustrated book, A Bubble, will be published in June.